We'll jump right in with this very first question. Tell me about your interest in quilt making and how you got started making quilts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think for a long time I was an artist in search of quilting. You know, I grew up in North Carolina, and North Carolina, as you know, has a long tradition of producing textiles, right? Right up into the 80s and kind of mid 80s, it kind of petered out. So I grew up surrounded in this landscape of textiles, but I didn't really have a personal connection. I know that my mom had a sewing machine when I grew up, but I didn't really see it being used that much. My first sewing memory was with her mom, who is now 104 years old, still kicking, wonderful lady. And I remember going to her house once and seeing that she was making a dress and being so fascinated. I was probably like 5 years old or so, being so fascinated with pattern paper, clothing pattern paper, like that, just brown, thin, and just so fragile. And I'm like, oh, sewing is so mysterious. You know, like, how do we take these raw materials and make something? But then I didn't do anything with fabric for about 20, 25 years. I do a lot of drawing. I tried painting, screen printing, lithographs, I mean, all kinds of stuff, right? And it seemed like I kind of bounced from one to the other for the longest while. And then one day, about 6 or 7 years ago now, my friends started having their first kids, you know? And so I was like, okay, this is a time for me to try to make a quilt again. I had made one in college. It didn't line up all perfect and square, so I thought it was a total failure. And I just like tossed it to the side. And we can come back to that quilt in a little bit if you want. But I didn't quilt between college and 5 or 7 years ago. I didn't quilt for nearly a decade.
Wow.
And I picked it back up with baby quilts, and I've been hooked ever since. So that's kind of, I didn't learn from anybody in my family, really. Well, that's not true. So I did learn a lot on YouTube, but my partner's mama in Eastern Tennessee was a big time quilter. Oh, and wow. So I learned the basics online, but every holiday when we would come home for Thanksgiving, especially, we would sit and talk about like, oh, how do you do your binding? You know, she does that East Appalachian kind of thing where you like roll the back up over the top.
Oh yeah,
And those little details. I remember one time coming home from Thanksgiving Day, part of our family tradition is going to the movies after the big meal.
Mm-hmm.
Mamma never did. She stayed home to clean the kitchen. Like, I don't know how you get to cook the meal and get stuck with it.
Yeah, that's a raw deal, but yeah.
Total raw deal. But Mama, I guess she was fine with it. She got to see her grandbabies, you know. Mm-hmm. But I came back from the movies that night, and she was sitting at the kitchen table with this quilt of mine that I had brought to work on, and she was just sewing in that binding.
Oh.
And I treasure that quilt because I can look at those stitches and know those aren't my stitches. Bless her heart, her eyes at that time were the best. But it's like it's her signature there in the quilt. Mm-hmm. And I treasure it. It's a beautiful thing.
Helping with the binding really is, that's an act of love for sure.
For sure.
That's my least favorite part. But so before you started quilting, did you have sort of a notion or idea about quilts and who made quilts? I mean, do you have any preconceived ideas about that? Or was it just something that was, you know, you did once, you thought, meh,
yeah.
Or it was a continually evolving idea?
I think, if I'm being honest, the very first quilt I ever made was a 4-square patch. I made in the third grade because we had like Laura Ingalls Wilder Day at school. We had just read Little House on the Prairie. And I'm like, oh, we're going to do all these activities. So Zach made him a little 4-square patch that turned into a pillow. And that was cute. But I think I didn't go any further, my third grade self, because in my mind, quilts were often like poofy, polyesterfill, nothing. Well, I don't want to say nothing is polyesterfill, but it, you know, it's not the best for the planet. But if you like your quilts poofy, that's fine. But that was the image I had in my mind. And so it took a long time for me to realize, oh, there's other things you can fill quilts with.
Sure.
I also thought quilts had to be patterned, right? But now we have seen in the last many, many years that there's many different ways to be a quilt. And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, that's so true. There's many ways to be a quilt. And you mentioned you learned a little bit with Mima and a little bit on YouTube. How did you really come to starting to make quilts, and what were you looking at in those early days to get a sense of the process?
In the early days, I was just trying to find patterns that I liked, you know, so I basically just like replicate some tried and true monkey wrench or something, you know. Pinwheel, my very first quilt that I saw to fruition all the way through from patching to binding, was a pinwheel quilt. But some things have held in common from that first baby quilt, because I sourced a lot of that fabric from remnants and salvage and things like that. Mm-hmm. Using repurposed materials is still 99% of what I use when I work now. But in the beginning, I was like, let me play by the rules. I wanted to learn the rules and learn techniques. And I made really pretty, precise, all my corners met kind of quilts. And then it didn't take too long before I discovered the quilts of G's Bend. And they obviously continue to have, for folks that are already familiar with my work, continue to have an influence on my work and on my approach. And a question I have in my mind that remains unresolved, and if anybody out there has thoughts, I'm on a search to figure this out. But you know, there is the issue in my mind, at least, about appropriating quilts that have come out of that part of Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it's weird for me as a white male in this field to be saying like, oh, I love these quilts, they're beautiful. And how do I pay homage and respect to that tradition and the latitude that those women, and one man as far as I know, opened up with their design approaches? How do I pay respect and homage to that without appropriating it? You know, that's one thing that I think of quite a bit. But when I saw those quilts from G's Bend, I was like, here we go. There's some breathing room in this art form, you know? And I think especially if I had to put my finger on one quilter specifically, is Irene Williams. Mm-hmm. She's my spiritual quilting grandmother, I would like to think, if she'd have me. She worked a lot in solitude. She worked a lot by herself, not as communal as some of the other ladies. And she was just like, I'm gonna do what I wanna do. Like one of my favorite quilts of hers are two basketball jerseys that she just cut up the side seams, right? And then it goes down. There's another one there where she took a bright orange poncho and just like sewed the hood down flat. She didn't even like try to like cut the fabric out. She just sewed the hood down, pressed it off. Mm-hmm. And like, I love the space that she had around her work to create. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw her work, I'm like, yeah, there's something fun we can do here with this. And so I've been kind of searching ever since to like, what else can we do with this art form?
Sure. That's a great question and a great journey. And I think a lot of people maybe struggle a little bit with that notion of G's Bend and appropriation. And, you know, I think in the early days, particularly of the modern quilt movement, there was a little bit of wrestling with that, maybe acknowledged or unacknowledged. So I'm really interested to hear you talk about that. So your early quilts were really precise. How would you describe your work now? I mean, are you mentioned you're a high school teacher, so you're not quilting full time all the time.
Well, it feels like it sometimes.
Yeah. So how would you describe the work that you make now, and where does it end up is really my favorite question about quilts. It's like, do you keep them? Do you sell them? Why are you doing it? And what are you making? That's a big question.
Yeah, like, well, why am I doing it? I can't think of a better way to spend my time is probably the honest answer, right? Mm-hmm. I really enjoy finding ways to bring new life to fabric and textiles. Another artist I really admire is TJ Muhammad, who talks about the hopefulness of discarded objects. Mm-hmm. And I just love that thought. I think he thinks of it in terms mostly of people who get overlooked in the margins of society, which is definitely something on my mind. But I think you can also think of it on a more tangible level, which is just, I see here in Brooklyn especially, I just see like clothes thrown out in the street like they're trash. Mm-hmm. And if we were just to wind the clock back 100, 150 years, cloth is one of the most valuable things a person could have because it took so much labor to make that cloth. So to see it just so produced in such a mass fashion and then just so easily discarded, it's something that's just really bothersome to me on a personal level. So I find a lot of gratification in giving new life and giving them a little something they didn't have in their initial incarnation. Mm-hmm. So that said, that's a lot of my starting points for my work now is the fabrics themselves, what I run across, what I find. I love, lately I've been making a few memorial quilts, memory quilts. Mm-hmm. I love thinking about the person that's being honored in this, especially with their clothing and what that means, whether I knew the person or not. I like to believe that you can tell something from somebody's clothes. You know, sure. You didn't know them. Like if you found this shirt from that I'm wearing now, a little patch on the elbow, you're like, oh, he never like pushes the sleeves up all the way. He's always like leaning on it and got, oh. Or I just was recently deconstructing a shirt that somebody gave me. And there was in the front shirt pocket, there's like a bunch of little little pieces of like soil and leaf matter and things like that. Like they had put something natural in their pocket at some point. I like to imagine this person, you know, walking through the woods or something. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I like starting with that point of inspiration, the fabric being the point of inspiration and going from there. Mm-hmm. And it's important to me to remain open and sensitive to that process. I, like a lot of improv quilters, rarely have an idea of where the project's going when I start. And quilting has taught me, and I'm so thankful for this lesson, because quilting has taught me that sensitivity is a virtue. I think for a long time, I gave myself a hard time for being too sensitive to like loud noises and strong smells and lots of people in a room, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But now I realize that the other side of that same coin is when I look at my design wall, and I can see, okay, here's some fabric and here's some fabric, but what's the difference if I do this, right? And it's what Andrew calls the just noticeable difference, right? Like there is a difference there, right? And what is it? And it's that sensitivity that sometimes is not my best friend, but sometimes is my best friend. It helps me see the difference. And so quilting has helped me accept that about myself as a person, and also realize that that's a virtue and a strength that I have as an artist. And so I'm very thankful for that. So being open to the process, starting with some fabric that has meaning and has some mm-hmm. kind of substance and life of its own, being open to that influencing the process, I would say informs almost all the pieces that I make now.
Fantastic answer. So I'm skipping ahead slightly. We typically ask folks to bring a touchstone quilt, or sometimes more than one. Do you want to share one quilt that you feel like you is a touchstone for you, or says something about your work?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Let's start with this one.
Okay, perfect.
I'm just going to say, this is not the most beautiful quilt I've ever made, but it's important for a reason, because I can tell you a story about it.
Oh, those are the best ones.
Yeah. So you can edit all this part out, I'm sure, right?
Sure. Even though the hanging process is equally fascinating to me. But
okay, well, hey.
Yeah.
Folks want to see all kinds of stuff, I know.
Yeah.
All right. How's that look to you?
That looks great.
That's pretty good? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a quilt 4 years ago, 2016. Like a lot of folks, like a little over half the country, I was really shocked at the way the 2016 election turned out.
Sure.
The president and I just don't agree on a lot of things, you know? And so after he won the Electoral College in 2016, I just felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me, a little bit lost at sea, you know? So I didn't sew for a long time, for several months. And this, what you see behind me, is the first full-size quilt that I made after he was elected. So I'd had my little time of hibernation. I was laying low, and then this quilt. And this was one of the quilts that I have a group of quilts, or I have an approach maybe that I call oracle quilting, because I either intentionally start with a question and I approach the fabric with that, or sometimes I'm gonna sit down and sew, and then some kind of message comes through. It's the latter one that happened with this quilt, because I didn't sit down with any design in mind other than just like, I'm gonna sew some colors I like together, and that's gonna make me a little happier by the end of the day than I was in the morning, you know, and that was my goal. But I did that, and I made this quilt. And then I stepped back and looked at it on my design wall. And I mean, I don't think it's too grandiose to say I had a vision of the future when I saw it, right? It was this idea that even though we can't see our way clear into the future, it's still there, right? And the future can still be bright. And so in my mind, what I saw when I looked at this quilt were all these orange squares, like sunlight pouring in through a window, so that all we have to do when we need that access to that new future is just, one, give it time. That time is a magic ingredient. And then two, we just gotta step into it, right? And so every time I look at this quilt, I see the presence of something better, more ideal than what we have now, that might not be immediately sensible, detectable, but it is there. And so I think of that when I look at this quilt, and brings me some comfort.
Yeah, it's particularly timely. I'll say that we are recording this on the day when we are awaiting news of the 2020 election. So it's certainly this notion of the future and unknown is weighing heavily on my mind, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that's what they say for a lot of us.
Exactly, yeah. So you mentioned that this quilt was a comfort. Have you used quilt making in the past to get through other difficult times?
Well, yeah.
Let's
go back one.
Let me Perfect. All right, we're jumping all over.
Okay, so this quilt, like I mentioned, didn't sew much at all when the president was first elected in 2016, but I could bring myself to sew small projects. And I remember it was January 2017. I had read this beautiful essay by Barbara Kingsolver. I love her essays. Her essays are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And she had written this one back in, must have been the 90s, must have been when Bush won, when she was talking about how the flag is so often viewed or associated with one political party, viewed with Republicans, viewed with the conservatives. Sure. When in reality, both parties have patriots, both parties have Americans, both parties have people that are loyal to their country. And so she was making the argument that Democrats and the left need to reclaim the flag as mm-hmm. one of their symbols as well. And so my response to reading that essay was to get on an online merchandise retailer, whose name I won't say on this show, and order this flag, this 100% polyester made in China flag. And I'm like, I was just about to click the button when I was like, Zach, what are you doing? You know how to sew. It's like I'd forgotten. Because I hadn't even made that other quilt that I showed you a second ago. I hadn't sewn anything in months. And so I sat down and I made this flag right here.
Wow.
From there, I started having these responses to the fire of the day. You know, whatever news item there was, I would process it by making patches here. So you can see here, Elizabeth Warren standing on her ground, persisting. This came from an uncle of mine. A Great America Takes All of Us. You know, so many things, so many memories. It's kind of like, to me, a quilty newspaper or a quilty photo album.
It's a little, kind of time capsule a little bit,
And so I stopped at the first 100 days. And so I took all the pieces I'd made after the first 100 days of his presidency and put them together in this Oh America quilt as a way of just saying, come on, folks, we can do it. Mm-hmm. We just got to do it together, you know?
Yeah, that's
it. And this is my favorite part. So this flag, I knew I wanted to use it. I love this flag. It's got a lot of good mojo now because I've used it so often. I've taken it to protests and rallies and marches, all kinds of stuff. So I didn't want to like permanently incorporate it. So it is safety pinned quilt. And there's this panel underneath that just kind of holds its space.
I love that.
Right?
Yeah. It's got a designated place to come back to, and also still a message that flag's out there doing its work.
Doing its work.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's great. Mm-hmm. So this is a fairly large quilt. I don't know how far past the frame it extends, but and you live in Brooklyn.
A little bit down.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe you live in a small space. I'm gonna leap to assume. Where can you describe the place where you make or your studio?
Yeah, so I call it my studio, but in reality, if you read between the lines, it's just my eat-in kitchen.
Sure.
I'm looking at it now. I would show you, but it's a disaster because I'm in the middle of like 5 different projects right now.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons we moved into this particular apartment is I have a very generous partner who says, okay, this apartment has an eat-in kitchen. That'll be a good space for you to work.
I'm like,
because it's just a one bedroom. We really don't have one. And so in that space is my cutting / ironing table and my little sewing table. And on the back wall, I finally got the design wall that people love to have, you know, when I live here. And having design wall does make a difference, right? Like there is a beautiful thing about being able to step back 20 feet and just see everything smaller.
Sure. You
know, more So it was helpful for me to have
the design wall.
I'm constantly trying not to accumulate materials, but it's hard because everything I see, I want to salvage and give new life to, whether that's fabric or I'm also into natural dyeing. And so I have a lot of you know, flowers and barks and acorns and things in there sitting around. It's tough, but I try my best to stay on top of the mess and try not to be a hoarder.
Yeah.
And then when it gets too much, I just start passing it along, you know, or trying to at least.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance between sort of hoarding and collecting what seems useful. And I think when you have an interest in, I have a real interest in stuff, which I think people think is maybe a little consumerism-y, but I really just think that objects have such delightful, it's hard to walk that line between accumulation and use, definitely, for sure.
You know, one rule of thumb that I don't follow, my partner is better at it than I am, but he loves books.
Mm-hmm.
So he tries to, if he brings a book into the house, then one goes out the house.
The one in, one out. It's so good in theory.
It's a great
Yeah.
We should try it sometime, maybe.
Yeah, I every year I think, this is going to be my one in, one out year. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like 5 in, sometimes something goes out. Like
yeah, you know, maybe it's, just easier to move to a bigger space. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, the one in, one out is me moving out of my house and moving into a larger space.
There you go.
Okay, I'll work on that. So yeah, it sounds like you live with the work and you kind of balance your space. How do you balance your time?
Ooh, you know, it's tough with a full-time job.
Yeah.
It really is. It's been a little bit easier in the last several months because so much of my time has been spent working from home, you know, doing remote education.
Mm-hmm.
So between classes, it's a lot easier just to like whip out a quilt and get a little work done, you know?
Sure.
Here in New York, we have gone back. I'm one of the teachers that goes back in the building every day. Mm-hmm. So that fun time came to an end, unfortunately. So I try my best. And that usually looks like in the evenings, I get about a half hour to an hour of time to work. Usually on the weekends, I get to devote one whole day, usually it's Sunday, to a sewing project to really make some good headway. And I try to get to a point where throughout the rest of the week, I can just do like the production aspect, you know? So like Sunday tends to be my big creative, big vision day. I make a plan for the week so that on Monday through Friday, I can just sit there and crank out the little pieces I need for the following Sunday when I go back to the bigger steps again.
Sure. Do you feel like your life as a teacher and your life as a quilt maker intersect in any ways, either in sort of the skills you use or like, do your students know about your quilts?
My students do know about my quilts. Yeah, for sure. Because I take some in from time to time to show them.
That's great.
Do they intersect?
It's fine if they don't. I'm just curious if you...
You know, no, but let's see if we can find a way where the Venn diagram overlaps. I do think... In the sense that my quilts are often contain a message. They teach in that sense, right? They carry some kind of meaning. I think there's something there that we could hang our hats on. I also think that quilting and I'm also into fermentation. I love making
fermentation. Sure.
So quilting and fermentation both have shown me that time is a magic ingredient, like I said a moment ago, that things happen that can only happen if given time, right? And I think teaching would also fall in that category. Like you can't force a human, a student in your class to perform well on a certain day, no matter how well you set them up for success. but one hopes that over the course of your time together, your course of your 9 months together, that you can move them from here to here. Mm-hmm. We're patient, we do our best, we wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's a great, those are great places for the Venn diagram to overlap, mm-hmm. for sure. Let me see, I have so many questions I wanna ask. I'm curious, if you feel like you work in a community of quilters. I mean, I think I first found out about your work as part of the 43 for 43 project, which is a community project. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you are working in a community, and do you enjoy that, is any kind of collaborative work? Or do you think sort of a head down solo approach is where you feel more comfortable?
You know, it's one foot in and one foot out. Like, it feels like, for folks that know the areas, like when you go to Carowinds in North Carolina, South Carolina, you could just straddle the state line, you know, uh-huh. North Carolina, right from South Carolina. I value strongly community. And I think at this point in my life, most of that is through social media, which can also be a challenging thing for me at times. I mean, those who follow me online will know that I post something. Sometimes I'll get on like a daily kick, and then sometimes I'll ghost for a couple weeks or a couple of months, if we're honest, you know? And it can be tough, because there are times when I'm in my darker days and I'm scrolling through Instagram, I'm like, oh, people are doing like such good work and I am wasting my life. You know, like that goes through the noggin every once in a while.
Sure.
And I never want my work to be that for somebody else. So sometimes I'm like, no more social media. But then I start missing my friends and I want to see what people are doing. So then I come back, you know, so it's an ebb and a flow thing. Mm-hmm. I do like collaboration. In fact, this quilt behind me, Heidi Parks helped me. And Heidi Parks also interviewed with y'all at one point.
Yeah.
And she helped me do a lot of this embroidery. We kind of did like a crazy quilt Americana type thing here. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a postal collaboration right now with a local textile artist, Palo Alto. Right. And we are working on a square that we just mail back and forth, and we just add a little section, you know, and then when we get super big envelope, we just start over, you know. Mm-hmm. I would like to do more collaborations, because I love that 43 for 43 project. Mm-hmm. You know, just a quick 10 seconds for folks who don't know it.
Yeah.
There were 43 teaching students, college age students in Mexico in 2014, 16, oh goodness, that disappeared one night. They were abducted and disappeared. And so folks down in Mexico for a long time have been trying to raise awareness about, hey, where are these folks? We want them back. You know, the government won't tell me anything. And so when I was down there a few years ago, I was just so struck and impressed by how hard people were working to make sure these people were remembered and that justice was found for them. That when I came back, and I should say that I was struck when I went down to Mexico on that particular trip, that when I learned what the number 43 meant, because you saw 43 everywhere, there's like graffiti on walls, scratching the restaurant tables, all kinds of things. When I realized what 43 meant, I had this vague memory of scrolling past a headline on a screen months before and not clicking, not reading, not internalizing. And like, how can we? We can't read about everything all the time.
Sure.
But I was like, dang, it's good to be in the first world. It's good to be in the United States. It's good to be where, for the most part, we hopefully feel safe and comfortable, you know? So all of that went to my mind. I'm like, okay, so if I miss this, and I'm someone who's interested in Mexico, Mexican history, Mexican culture, Mexican people, I'm sure other people missed it too. So I came back to the US and I organized this 43 for 43 project, in which I rallied, well, it turned out more than 43, because in the end, I think we had maybe 64 participants.
Oh, wow.
Everybody made a square for one of the boys that disappeared. People embroidered their portraits, like Heidi embroidered a portrait for one of the guys. That everybody put their names on there. A lot of applique was done. And we made it into a long quilted protest banner that then I took to Mexico City with me, and with a mediator helped get it to the families, you know, that they could for whatever purposes they need to, you know, in the streets or to hang somewhere or whatnot. So I love collaborative projects like that because I do believe that there are things that can only happen when we're working together. And I would like to find, I got ideas. I mean, always, it's good to be me because I got ideas. The thing is, I just don't have the time necessarily to organize these things, but I am hopeful that one day I will, because I really enjoyed the role of organizer and I enjoyed being the person that literally pieced it all together, mm-hmm. and thinking of ways to raise awareness and to use my time and my talent in ways that hopefully leaves this world a little bit better than it was before I plopped down in 1980.
That's a great answer and a great, I think, admirable goal. You mentioned, many of your quilts have messages. Why do you think that quilts are uniquely suited, or rather, do you think that quilts are uniquely suited for carrying a message?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it has to do with just how domestic they are, right? All forms of art, I think, have something special or unique that only they can do, right? That's why they exist as an art form. I would say one of the things that only quilting can do is take something so domestic, something so accessible, mm-hmm. something that would otherwise perhaps be wasted, thrown away in the garbage trash can, and turn it into something else. And especially if we're thinking of some kind of community quilting, activism quilting, political quilting, there's ways to say, here, for example, this quilt, here are some things that really matter to me. In my heart of hearts, this is what I carry around with me on a daily basis. So I'm going to reach into my drawers. I'm going to take out my clothes. I'm going to cut them up. And then I'm going to make something beautiful to show you, mm-hmm. right? In a similar way, in Latin America, there's this protest tradition of the cacerolazo, which is started often with women. When it was time to take the streets to protest something, they didn't do a whole lot of organizing and like funding super PACs and all this kind of thing. They just went to the kitchen drawer, pulled out a pot and a wooden spoon and went to the street banging, right? Like, it's taking what's in our hearts, readily accessible, democratic, and taking it to the public, putting it out there in the community. And so I think that's something that makes quilting especially suited for community engagement, for the public forum, and for sharing what's on the inside with everyone on the outside.
That's a great answer. I think, they have so many things going for them, and that kind of sometimes they're a little unassuming, which is really nice. It's sort of a soft way to get a hard point across.
Which I think someone who's an expert at that is Catherine Clark. Mm-hmm. I don't know if folks are familiar with her work. But she has a way of she made this quilt recently about inequities in rent stabilization or apartments, something like that. Anyway, folks can look her up. Maybe you can edit this part out. But folks can look her up.
We'll share some photos, yeah.
We'll show some photos, because she has a way of taking these hard truths and making them into soft fabric, literally. And it makes you want to like say, hey, what are all these little squares representing? Mm-hmm. What's going on here? What's the story? And then you step back, you think about it, you're like, well, dang, that was tough, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think she's an expert at that. I hate that I'm blanking on the critical detail right now.
No, that's all right.
It'll come to me as soon as we click in meeting.
That's how it always happens. Uh-huh. So you've talked about a few names, Heidi Parks and Kevin Clark now. And Irene Williams. Is there other folks or other sort of movements or anything? It doesn't have to be quilting related that you're really drawn to or have been inspiring you lately?
Ooh, I would say, the answers that come first to mind are Irene Williams, are Heidi Parks. I think Heidi does a wonderful job of turning the inside out, you know, and using her life and her body in ways to produce work that is very personal. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that as artists, we should all strive for, you know, like what's the one thing that only I can do and let me do that. Right. Mm-hmm. I think Heidi's a really great model of that. TJ Muhammad, I mentioned earlier, who makes wonderful, I mean, he wouldn't consider himself a quilter, but he does use a lot of fabric, and he recently made a bunch of really lovely textile portraits of people that are close to him. He's from Ghana, so he's working in this African tradition. It's really lovely. And he's the one that mentioned the hopefulness of discarded objects. You know, I just
love that.
And there's always writers too. You know, I love, like Emerson, for example. I'm working on this piece for Feel Good Fibers, for their blog, about the role that beauty plays in our work. Like, is it enough just to make a beautiful something, or does it need to have more meaning? And I think the inspiration or what got me thinking down that line was Emerson, who wrote this really beautiful poem to the rhododendron, right? He's walking through the woods of Massachusetts. He sees this rhododendron, and he says that, you know, if the sages come and ask you, like, why do you exist, rhododendron? All you have to say is, beauty is its own excuse for being, right? Like, beauty is enough, you know? And so I feel like sometimes when I'm working, I'm like, okay, if this particular project doesn't have capital M meaning, that's okay. Emerson gave me permission to say, if it's beautiful, that's enough. Right. And so I would lump Emerson in there with Thoreau. Definitely is one of my huge influence. I love that he's trying to see through the shifting sands of what was happening during the 1800s and try to predict kind of where we're going, try to see where we're coming from. I mentioned Barbara Kingsolver. I love her nonfiction essays. And I love poetry too, right? I mean, who doesn't love like Mary Oliver with her Wild Geese poem? I don't know. I read a lot. But yeah, so there's a few names folks want to a glimpse of some of my input, you know?
That's great. Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting sometimes to hear how people funnel all their different parts of their life and their brain into what they're thinking about. Mm-hmm. So this next question is a doozy. I love to ask it, but it's a challenge. But what do you think makes a great quilt?
I'm gonna say that, you know, quilt and art can be different things. Great quilts can be great art, and great quilts can be great quilts, right? So it depends on how we want to frame the question. I think a great quilt is anything that is made with care and attention, anything that brings pleasure to the person making it and pleasure to the person receiving it. I think if it meets that criteria, then it's a great quilt, right? Now, if we want to frame it a little bit larger, if we want to zoom out or maybe zooming in, I don't know what direction we're zooming, but and think about what makes good quilt as art. Emerson says beauty's enough, and I'm inclined to agree with that. But I think the reason I'm drawn to quilting is that it's not just beautiful, that it also has utility, that it also has function. It keeps us warm. It tells stories. It's a way for us to live on just a little bit, you know? Anne Truitt, who is a sculptor that some of our listeners may know, is known for her almost human size, 5 or 6 feet tall, 4-sided columns made out of wood. And somebody wants to ask her, well, why do you work in wood? And she says, well, it has about the same lifespan as a human being. And I think, oh, maybe the same thing applies to fabric, right? That we create these beautiful things that with one hopes gets used, right? Gets loved and doesn't last that much longer than we do, but it can last a little bit. And I think that when I think of great quilts, there's something about the fact that they're impermanent that also comes into play, that they're fragile and they're delicate things. And because they're meant to be used, they break down faster. And I think there's something in that natural decomposition that is beautiful and something to aspire towards.
That's a good answer.
Okay.
No, that's a great answer.
Off the top of my head.
It's not an easy question. And I always feel a little devious for asking it because I think it's sort of, honestly, sort of a cruel question. But we always get great answers. I mean, it's so fascinating to hear people's variety of notions of what that means and what greatness means. Where do most of the quilts that you make end up? Do you keep them? Do you sell them? Do you, and where, you know, what is the dream for their future? That they do decompose or that they're preserved forever? I mean.
Well, listen, you know, a quilter's gotta live. So about half of my quilts have been sold.
Sure. I think we sometimes people are skittish about talking about this, but it's a huge part of the quilt making world. So yeah.
So about half have been sold. They're out there in the world doing their thing.
Living their lives.
Right out on people's beds.
Sure.
Over their banisters, hanging on walls, whatever, you know, whatever folks do with them. The other half are folded up in a big pile in my bedroom. Awesome. In our little tiny one bedroom Brooklyn apartment, there is along one wall, my long arm machine that I got several years ago.
Oh my gosh.
If you were to ask me what my least favorite part of quilting is, don't hate me for this. I don't like to quilt. I don't like the actual quilting.
I'm with you. If I can make a quilt and never quilt it, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Which I guess is possible, you know?
And so that's why I got the long arm, because I'm like, okay, that makes the least unsavory part of the process for me a little bit easier. And honestly, all my quilts get quilted the same way, unless I'm hand quilting. If it's machine quilting, it's just parallel lines. Because I want the quilting itself to disappear. And I want the forms and the colors of the quilt top to come forward, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but you're asking, where did the quilts end up? So along one bedroom, blocking the window with our fire escape, probably not safe, is the long arm machine. And there's a stack of probably 24 quilts folded up there. At some point in the future, I would love to have a space where I can display them, hang them on walls. That's what I would love. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. I think this is also a timely question given the quilt you have behind you, but people typically refer to quilts as a uniquely American art. Mm-hmm. We can argue about that as cows come home, but that's kind of the notion. What do you think that is the importance of quilts in American life? It's a loaded question, but mm-hmm. if you want to talk a little bit about that.
I do love, and it kind of circles back to a few moments ago, but I do love that quilting is not usually something that's done in a studio. It's not done in a separate space usually. It's done in people's homes. It is the heart. I mean, when you think of the most private place in your home, I got two places. One's the toilet, the other one's the bed, right?
Sure.
When you think of the heart of your home, I would argue is your bed. And we're talking about making things for that space. And so when we choose to share that space with the outside world, there's this potential for something really special there, you know? So when you combine the fact that you're taking something that ought to be private and you're making it public, and you're working with something that everybody can identify with, everyone wears clothes, right? Everybody wears fabric. It's our second skin, our second home. When you can make it something tangible that people can connect with, sometimes I think something can unlock or shift, or the needle can move a little bit. And so at a time when we are having trouble communicating, and by we, I mean Americans, we're having trouble communicating with one another, there has to be some room in quilting for us to have something deeper than a conversation, right? Like something that helps us reconnect with what truly are our core values as Americans. I believe that almost all of us would think that goodness is an American value. Compromise has been a long American value. Consensus building, working together, getting the job done. I mean, these are things that we could really agree on. Mm-hmm. So the thing that happens though is that we disagree on the words to use, right? So maybe we take words out of the equation, we just pick up some fabric and needle and thread instead. And let's see what happens if we work together on that. I don't know what that looks like. I mean, it's been something I've been puzzling on. But I think there's space in the United States right now for some really powerful quilting projects to happen.
Well, I can't wait to see them. I really hope that those will come out of this moment. So it has been really a delight to talk to you. Is there anything you want to add or that you didn't feel like you got to share or anything else?
No, I want to say thank you for this opportunity to talk.
Sure, thank you.
It's always nice to talk to a like-minded soul, you know, and I want to thank folks for listening. They've been listening to this whole thing. I got a lot of questions, you know, about how life works. So if anything that folks have heard today in our conversation, like it sparks an idea, I would love to hear from people. And so maybe we can figure out a way to connect somehow.
Absolutely.
Because I do think that when we all put our heads together, we can see things a little more clearly, you know? I know, I appreciate it. I'm very thankful for this time.
Yeah, well, thank you. I am I'm technically supposed to say that we have concluded our interview at 3:52 p.m. I didn't actually say when we started it, so that's it's not that helpful. That was really fantastic. Thank you so much, Zach, again. Yeah, so